feet and daylight unto my path. And a light unto, a light unto my path, my path.
Welcome to Searchlight, a survey through Scripture with Pastor John Corson. It is our desire to bring you a systematic study of the entire Bible, chapter by chapter, book by book. Today, we are beginning the book of Ruth. As we shall see, this is an intriguing and important book. Our first teaching in this book is called Nothing Just Happens. It's an interesting title for a very real truth. Let's go ahead and join Pastor John for this encouraging study.
Turn to Ruth chapter 2, if you would. You are in for a real sweet treat this week. That is, in reading through the book of Ruth, it's going to be a blessing to you, I guarantee. Ruth, it's a mini masterpiece. That is, it's short, only four chapters. But the storyline of the book is, well, it would make a mega blockbuster movie or a best-selling novel, you see. Because there are so many elements, there are so many parts of the storyline that are fascinating and interesting. The characters you can relate to. Oh, there's three tenacious women that are tied together by the common thread of suffering and sorrow and pain and death. And we can see how they navigate those circumstances and go through the heartbreaks and gut-wrenching experiences and how it works out amazingly. There's a gracious grand guy named Boaz, a man of incredible wealth and a man of real sterling character. He's a giant of a character. He's a guy that if you were casting a movie about this book, Ruth, you would want to make his part played by somebody like Charlton Heston, maybe 30 years ago. And there's also a little slimy guy that gets in the way and is going to mess things up. As you'll see, we might put Danny DeVito in his role. Interesting characters. The story moves very, very rapidly, and it's very, very powerful and impacting, as you'll see. At the same time, it's a classic in literature. In fact, there's not a university in the country that doesn't teach the book of Ruth as an example of classic literature. It's a combination of incredible, beautiful poetry and well-written prose. And so many people study the book in college as a literature course, using this as an example of what writing ought to be. It's a grand story. It's beautifully written. It moves quickly. But for you and me, there's all kinds of lessons that relate to, theology and typology and Bible prophecy. This book does more to explain God's grand plan, His divine design for the nation Israel and the church, and how they come together in the end times. And we're going to see in the layer after layer of this story that we'll explore, we're going to see all kinds of stuff that relates to Bible prophecy, that relates to biblical typology, that is, pictures of Jesus that we'll see that are found in the man Boaz, portrayed so beautifully. So there's Bible prophecy, and there's typology, and there's some incredible theology that we'll explore too. And it's very tempting for me at this point to want to launch out and talk about prophecy and talk about the end times as portrayed in Ruth. But that'll have to wait for another session, another study. Tonight, I want to share with you something that's very simple but very practical, very important. It's found in chapter 2, so if you would turn there, if you're not there yet, and look as I read chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. And Ruth, the Moabitess, said unto Naomi, "Let me now go to the field and glean ears of corn in him or after him in whose sight I shall find grace." And Naomi said to Ruth, "Go, my daughter." So she went, verse 3, and came and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And her hap, just so happened, her hap was to light on or come on a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the kindred of Elimelech. Verse 4, "Behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem and said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered him, 'The Lord bless thee.' Then said Boaz to his servant that was set over the reapers, 'Whose damsel is this?' As he saw Ruth the Moabitess gleaning in the field." Amazing. Here's the story. Here's what's happening. Here's what I want you to see and think through with me. Something is taking place in chapter 2 that appeared to be circumstantial, accidental, coincidental. That is, we read in this second phrase of verse 3, "And her," that is Ruth's hap, "was to light on a part of the field that belonged to Boaz." This wonderful, wealthy guy, the hero of our story, a picture of a type of Jesus ultimately. It just so happened that she made her way to the part of the field that Boaz was gleaning in that day. It just so happened. That is written, I suggest to you, with a twinkle in the eye and a smile on the face, because nothing just happens. It was all part of a grand plan. It was all part of a divine design. Here's what's happening. In chapter 1, we see a happy little family. Elimelech is the father. His wife, her name is Naomi. Naomi means pleasant. They had two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. This happy little family lived in Israel, in the tribe of Judah, in the town of Bethlehem. Now, as you may know, Bethlehem means literally house of bread. Judah means literally praise. What a great place to raise a family. In the house of bread, in the place of praise. That's what we desire to do as well. Our kids, to be fed with the bread of the word, to know the bread of life, Jesus Christ, and to be in the place of praise perpetually. Great place for a family. In Israel, with God's people. In Judah, the place of praise. In Bethlehem, the house of bread. But then something happened. The plot thickens. Because a famine came into the land of Israel. And they ran out of bread physically, materially. And what Elimelech decided to do with Naomi, his wife, and their two boys was to leave God's country, to leave Israel, something they ought not to have done. But they decided to leave Israel and go across the border to Moab, because there was food. There was bread. There was material provision. They sacrificed the house of bread, the place of praise spiritually, to make their way to Moab for material reasons. In Psalm 108, God declared, "Moab is my washpot." Or we would say today, "Moab is my toilet bowl." It was a place where people were swirling in carnality, sinking in sin constantly. There was immorality, there was idolatry. It was a problem place, very definitely. Well, that's where they go. Elimelech takes his wife, Pleasant, Naomi, his two boys, and off they go to Moab. They stay there for 10 years. And while they were there, well, it took a toll on the family. It always does, it always has, it always will. When people leave where they're supposed to be, the house of bread, the place of praise, and wander off into Moab on a given day to try and find bread materially or bread physically and not consider what's truly important spiritually and eternally. So off they go. And then when they're there, well, most of you know the story. Elimelech dies. Now Naomi is a widow. Her two sons, Mahlon and Chilion, they each of them take on Moabitish wives. Because they're in this place called Moab, a type of the world, a toilet bowl, a cesspool, well, they end up marrying two girls from there. And then, Mahlon and Chilion, the two boys, also get sick and die. Things are caving in. Things are coming down. Things are looking really grim. Naomi, after 10 years, she's lost her husband. She's lost both of her boys. All of the men in her life that meant something have left her, literally, physically. All of the men that she was counting on and relying on and leaning on, they're no longer there. They've gone away. They died in Moab. And now she hears news. A rumor comes her way. There's provision back in Bethlehem, in your home, the place where you ought to have been. There's food there. And she says, I'm going back. I'm going back. And she makes her way back to Bethlehem. And when she comes to her hometown, they look at her, Naomi, whose name meant pleasant, and they couldn't believe what they saw. The 10 years of difficulty and tragedy, compromise and sin had taken a toll on her. And she said, don't call me pleasant or Naomi anymore. Call me Mara, which means bitter. And then she says something which absolutely intrigues me. Something which leaps out to me. Look at what she says when she makes her way back to her home city, back to her home country. 10 years later, her husband dead, her sons gone. She says there in Ruth chapter 1, she says in verse 20, call me not Naomi, which means pleasant, call me Mara. She says in verse 21, I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. That strikes me. I went out full. What? Listen carefully. Listen. When she left 10 years earlier, she thought she was empty then. We don't have enough food. We don't have enough money. We got to do something, honey. So she went to Moab. But now looking back 10 years later, she says, I was full. Oh, I might not have had money or bread physically, but I had my husband, and I had my two boys. I had family. I was full, even though then I thought I was poor. I realize now I was rich. Listen to me. Listen carefully. The thing that you are anxious about tonight, worried about, the financial pressure, the rejection by that person that you cared for, the job situation, the retirement plan, whatever it might be that has caused you to feel a little bit anxious and worried, feeling as though I don't have much. Listen, it is nothing in comparison. Whatever anxiety that you're working through, whatever tension that you're feeling, it's nothing in comparison to what you have with you tonight. That wife or husband sitting next to you, those kids that are here with you, being able to go home and see them, or being able to share time here with sisters and brothers in the congregation, your health, whatever it might be. Listen, whatever you're anxious about, whatever you're worried about, making the team, getting the mortgage, whatever it might be, listen, it's nothing in comparison to what you have. You are full right now, even though you might not think so. See, you never know what you have until you lose it. And when you lose it, like Naomi, you say, what was I thinking? I was full in the time of famine because I had my husband. I was full in the time of famine because I had my family. And now I realize I went out full and I tried to make stuff happen financially, physically. And I come back now empty. I realize what I had, and I didn't realize it when I had it. When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost, count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done. Listen, folks, tonight, count your blessings. Tonight, realize how blessed you are. Whatever anxieties you have, pale in comparison. Whatever worries you're dealing with, pale in comparison to the blessings that you've been given, to what you enjoy that has come your way, that you're surrounded with this very day. And so she realized that 10 years too late. She said, I went out full. I didn't think I was. We thought we needed bread, but I realize now I was blessed, and now I am empty. I've lost my husband. I've lost my family. Interesting. But the plot thickens. The story continues. She says, even though that's true, she says, I've come back empty. I didn't realize what I had when I had it, but now I do. Still, she makes her way back. I want you to see that. After 10 years, she finally says, this is it. Gotta quit. Time to split. Moab just don't fit. It's time for me to get out of here. I've been here for 10 years swirling around, licking my wounds. It's time for me to get back to where I belong, get back to where I once came from, back to Bethlehem, the house of bread, back to Judah, the place of praise. It's time for me. It's time for me. It's time for me. And Satan will whisper in your ear and in mine too, if we let him, it's too late for you. It's been 10 years. It's been 10 years. Your time to be involved in serving the Lord, or your time to draw close to the Lord, or your time to receive blessings from the Lord, it's too late. You've been circling in the toilet bowl too long. But she didn't buy into that lie. This is it. Time to quit. Gonna split. Moab don't fit. I'm going back to where I belong. I'm going back to my people again. And you know what? As we go through the book, as you read it this week, you'll see it wasn't too late. It wasn't too late at all. Oh, she is an old lady. It's true. Way past menopause. Way beyond the time of bearing children or nursing babies. But wait, you'll see at the end of the story, Ruth, her daughter-in-law, has a baby and gives it to Naomi and calls it Naomi's child. And Naomi puts that baby to her old breast and begins to nurse it miraculously, beautifully. This old lady, because she chose to make a decision. She didn't buy into the lie. It's too late. But rather she said, it's time for me to get back to where I'm supposed to be. And when she did, the life flow began again. It's never too late. I don't care if you're 75 or 105. It's never too late. I don't care if you're 25 or 45. It's never too late. I don't care where you've been, how long you've been swirling in the cesspool of sin, how long you've been circling in the toilet bowl of Moab. Maybe it's been 10 minutes. Maybe it's been 10 days, perhaps 10 weeks, maybe 10 months, maybe 10 years, maybe longer. But it's not too late. That's the lie of the enemy. Too late. But Naomi, the book of Ruth, says that's not reality. If you choose to say this is it, time to quit, gonna split, Moab don't fit, I'm going back to where I'm supposed to be, watch the life flow come to you and flow through you miraculously. Watch your life being able to sustain and succor and nurture and nurse younger believers. drawing them to your heart, letting them drink of your own experience, and watching them do better. It's never too late. Oh, I wish I had time to talk about time, but I don't have the time to talk about time. Suffice it to say right here, right now, to you, tonight, it's not too late. Don't buy into that lie. She went back, and she discovered exactly what the word declares. Behold, he makes all things beautiful in his time. She discovered what Paul preached is true. What Paul said is true. The Lord declares, behold, I make all things new. And tonight, it's not too late. I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know who's been circling in the cesspool of sin, round and round and round again. You feel as though you've been flushed. It's over. You're through. Not so. Not true. Tonight, right where you're at, God is calling you. God is telling you, hey, come to Bethlehem again. Come to the place of praise once more. And watch and see what I'll do miraculously, how I'll use you to nurture others, to succor others, as they'll draw life from you that I produce in you and flow through you. It's true. It's true. It's not too late. Well, she makes her way. Time to split. I'm going back to where I'm supposed to be. And as she travels down that long road from Moab, this Naomi, she makes her way towards Bethlehem. Her two daughters-in-law, the Moabitish gals that were married to her two sons that were now dead, said, we're going with you. Oh, hey, Naomi said to Ruth and to Orpah that day, don't do that. You see, I don't have the ability to bear more children, sons, for you to marry, as was the tradition, the custom. We'll talk about that on Wednesday. I can't produce more sons for you. I'm long beyond those years. So go back to your people. Go back to Moab and find yourselves new husbands there. And Orpah, one daughter-in-law, she kissed her and said, okay, and went back to Moab that day. The other daughter, Ruth, said, I'm not leaving you. Where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God will be my God. She made this incredible declaration of commitment. This Moabitish daughter-in-law said to Naomi, the Jewish lady, I want to follow you, and I want to worship the same God that you do. See, Ruth recognized that even the worst that God has to offer, as she saw what Naomi went through, is better than what Moab gives. And she said, I want to be with you and travel alongside of you back to your country and worship your God, Naomi.
Ruth is making a smart move here. Somehow she sees in Naomi the reality that the best place to be is with God. And it doesn't matter how much material stuff comes along with the deal. What matters is the spiritual fulfillment that is found only in the one true God. Pastor John will finish this interesting teaching on our next program. As he does, he will come back to the point about nothing just happens. It is most intriguing. Please be sure to join us again.
This teaching is also available on the Searchlight website at johncorson.com. You will also find on the website Pastor John's books and other Bible study resources. Again, the address of the website is johncorson.com.
We all go through challenging times in our lives, but we are not alone in these times. We have a faithful and loving God who walks with us day by day. To help us explore the faithfulness of God in these difficult times, Pastor John has made a book available called A Future and a Hope. In this book, John shares some of his personal experiences in dealing with tragedies, including the death of his young wife and later the death of his 16-year-old daughter. As John relates his own stories, we see a God who is faithful and compassionate at all times. A Future and a Hope is especially comforting for those who are currently experiencing tragedy or loss in their life. If you would like this book for yourself or someone you know, you can order it from our website at johncorson.com.
Searchlight is a listener-supported ministry. We appreciate your prayers and support. May the Lord richly bless you.